Today again is April 29th, and we are now learning the third Mishnah, the third Perek, Mishnah Gimel, Perek Gimel of Masechet Brachot, and the Mishnah, which is very, very short, reads Nashim Vavadim Uktanim, Keturim Kriyat Shema. It's the separate piece that I gave you at the very beginning. It's not one of these extra sheets, it's the basic sheet that looks like...
Wait, is basic it? Sheet here, this?
Here it is.
Oh, yeah.
Mishnah Gimel. Nashim v'avadim uktanim keturim mikriyat shma umin ha-tfilin v'chayavin v'tfila uv'mezuzah uv'virkat hamazon. Okay? So... we notice themes we've been talking about quite a bit. We notice Kriyat Shema, and we notice the Patur mi Kriyat Shema, and we notice the contrast between Kriyat Shema and Tefillah, something we've seen more than once. And remember that Tefillah, in its technical sense, means specifically Shmona Esrei, right? The Amidah, right? Kriyat Shema is not Tefillah. Kriyat Shema is a communal declaration of loyalty, but it's not Tefillah, it's not a monologue or dialogue with God in any sense. And that contrast that sometimes is patur mi kriyat shema, while there's an obligation in tefillah, we've seen at least two times in the past. Remember at the top of the tree, there they were told that they have to come down for tefillah, whereas kriyat shema they say when they're in the tree. There was just one example of this contrast that we've seen. We also saw it in the first mission of this perek, that there's a patur mi tefillah, but an obligation in shema. Okay. So now let's just look through the questions. The first question we just answered, that tefillah refers to the Amidah that everyone knows. And we also know, we've beaten this dead horse to death so many times, the difference between Kriyat Shema and tefillah. I just said it again. This is Blech Techa V'Derek, this is community, this is Jews together. This and the other one, tefillah, is you and God, private. Okay.
We do say, I just want to ask on that point, we do say, tefillah in a minyan, the community, is important. You have to do that. And you say Shema on your own,
right?
When you're on your own.
I've been waiting a month for someone to ask that question. At the end of every class, I kind of wipe the sweat off my brow. Wow, I didn't ask that question. If I had a good answer, I would have put it up myself. But what can we say? Fundamentally, tefillah, as we know from the experience, and we know from the experience, it's between the individual and God. There's a second aspect of tefillah b'minyan. And just like you said, Kriyat Shema, there's no such thing as Kriyat Shema b'minyan. But we remember going back to the first perek, when Beit Hillel, as opposed to Beit Shammai, created a time framework of Kriyat Shema that allowed it to be taken out of the bedroom and out of the framework of one's individual life, and was given time, community times, and that, I supposed, and I put forth the hypothesis, that that's part of the process of creating a community framework for Kriyat Shema. And again, the words of Shema are indicative of that. Shema Yisrael, you're talking to Yisrael and not to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And many of the halachot we've seen do seem to fall into that rubric of individual as opposed to community. So what can I do? There's a second aspect of tefillah that's b'minyan, but that's really, even that is the individuals coming together in a relationship with God. It's not a relationship between them. It might be a relationship between them as a means towards approaching God, but it's fundamentally approach towards God, which is different for a Shema, which is not an approach to God at all.
I just need some clarification, because
so do I.
The origin, the Kriya Shema, at least the origin of the actual saying Shema Yisrael, etc., was at the time of Yaakov's, he was on his deathbed, and his sons said in unison, if I remember correctly in the Torah, Shema Yisrael, etc., Shema Kino, Shema Chad. Did they not say that at the same time as a
do you want
family?
Me to answer that question? I'll tell a story. There's a story that Nechama Leibowitz always used to tell. She would say that she would walk into a classroom, and she especially at early stages in her life, she taught teachers. She taught teachers of younger children. She said she'd walk into a classroom of the Seminar Lemorot of a teacher's college. You have, you know, 20, 30 girls, they're learning to be teachers, and teaching the subject of Avraham Avinu. She'd ask them, open up your Tanakhim, where do you find the story of Avraham destroying the idols? And they would search, and one would say, and this and that, look, they'd all look, until one said, I can't find it. Another said, I can't find it. And that was her way of teaching them, it's not there. But we've been trained from our education that there's such a thing that happened, Avraham destroyed the idols in his father's house, etc. And we've never learned to make the distinction between Torah Shebal Peh and Torah Shebichtav. It's not there, and you have to know what's there and what's not there. So the same thing to Yaakov. It's not there. Wow. It's not there. Okay. It's a very famous midrash. So now let you go on.
Well, yeah, because if it was basically said in that context, you know, whether it's a Biktav or in midrash or wherever it may be found, it was said, from what I recall, in the context of all of the sons together, and clearly they numbered a minyan.
Uh-huh. Okay. We go on to question 3. What was the halachic principle that stood behind the exemptions from Kriyat Shema and Tefillah that we already encountered in the previous chapter? And in this chapter, and of course, Osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah, we've seen again and again and again, Rabban Gamliel and his wedding night. And the... in our chapter, those who are dealing with the dead and those who are in Nichum Avilim, any other examples we saw? Osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. It was a theme that arises again and again and again. And therefore, if our Mishnah that talks about Nashim Avadim Muktanim, women, servants, and children, if it doesn't say why they're exempt, I'm going to assume with a perfect right that we're still in the same context that we've been discussing week in and week out, that what's under the surface here is Osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. And this is a... Actually, let's go to question 4 before we go on. Is it possible to understand that the same halachic principle, albeit in a slightly different fashion, is behind the exemption of women that is mentioned in this mission? Of course, the answer is possible. From context, it has to be. There's no other reason that's been playing itself out here. And I have to look and try and figure out what it might be. What might be the osek b'mitzvah, the mitzvah that one is doing, that causes one to be patur min mitzvah. And that cannot but lead us to an understanding that women are understood to be always involved in a mera mitzvah of creating the Jewish family, of nurturing the Jewish family. And it's, you know, like my used to hear when I was a kid, a man may work from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. She's osek b'mitzvah in a certain sense. We'll have to clarify that more. It's Srim Va'al B'Shot, 24 hours a day. And therefore it makes perfect sense to talk about that principle as a basis for exemption from Shema. Of course, we have to ask deeper questions
also
of what's going on.
Women on certain days are tummy, and they cannot pray.
That
pray.
Actually is not so.
Not so?
It's not so in the
but
sense
not
that...
always kosher.
But there's no reason for a woman who's a nida not to say Shema. No reason at all.
Uh-huh.
So that's not what's going on here.
Not the reason. No.
It's not. But I'm really interested where you get that from, Mr. Galler, because there are certain
certain times of women
certain beliefs
are not,
but those are not within halakha. There are certain beliefs or customs of exempting women from mitzvot when they're nida,
yeah,
but they're not grounded in mainstream halakha. Say it again.
You probably learned that in cheder.
That's why I'm asking. I'm really interested. Yeah. It's like it's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So I remember as a child.
Really? Wow. So, so if we have this matter of women being exempt, and the reason is something to do with Osek b'mitzvah, and it doesn't say what the mitzvah is, and we're going to assume it's something to do with a woman's role in building the Jewish family. So, if we start to think, we might say something like this. if indeed it's a central matter for the Jewish people that a woman be involved there, always ready for the family framekin, for the children, you might say, okay, she's always oseket b'mitzvah, so she should be exempt from all the mitzvot. 613 mitzvot with no exception. Or perhaps to be more exact, she'll be exempt from the positive mitzvot, but not the negative mitzvot. Oseket b'mitzvah never allows you to be exempt from negative mitzvot. Like you never say, you're allowed to eat pork because it doesn't make any sense, you're involved in another mitzvah. To refrain from something doesn't require time. So let's say she'll be exempt from all the positive mitzvot. She has to do the negative ones. Why? Because she is oseket b'mitzvah all the time, the central meta mitzvah of building the Jewish family. But that can't work, because it would be self-defeating. For a woman to be exempt from all the mitzvot, how could she be oseket in the midst of building a Jewish family if she has no connection to Judaism? It doesn't make any sense. So we'd have to find, or I should say the halacha will have to find, what mitzvot are we going to obligate women in, even though there might be a basis to exempt because of a sekhba mitzvah, patoma mitzvah. What are the basic mitzvot that a woman has to do, even though there is a conflict and a tension, because otherwise she won't be connected to the fabric of Judaism and will have nothing to pass on? And what mitzvah, on the other hand, are we indeed going to exempt her from? So I would look at this Mishnah as struggling with that dilemma, that there's good reason to exempt women from all the mitzvot, but there's very good reason not to. And you have to struggle and figure out which mitzvot is the halacha going to say these have to be done despite the conflict with raising the family, which mitzvot can we forego because of a sacred mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. So we take tefillah and shema as the two mitzvot that have been at the center of our material, and we ask ourselves, which of those is a both she's going to be exempt, yeah. Both she's going to do, is going to be one or the other, and we go back to the framework we've been working with all the time, that Shema is a matter of building community, right? Of Belechtecha B'derech, it's something that we've never seen is used to override community mitzvot, but rather it is always overridden by community mitzvot, or you do both at the same time. So being that Shema has always been overridden by community mitzvot, so what happens here? So we say the same thing. Shema is going to be overridden by the community mitzvah par excellence of building the community, of building the basic building blocks of the community. So Shema shall be exempt. What about tefillah? Tefillah has always been different. Tefillah has always been a mitzvah.
The personal
mitzvah that we say you do it and you push aside the community mitzvah. If you have to say tefillah and you also have to do the maaseh of Rabban Gamliel on the wedding night, we don't say that you push aside tefillah. We say you do tefillah and you find a way to manage with your other obligation.
Yeah.
When someone walks into the synagogue and wants to say hello to you, said shema, you can finesse. You can do it at the same time, or you can take a little bit away from Shema to talk to other people, but you won't impinge upon your tefillah for the community. The same thing here we're going to say. You won't impinge upon tefillah for the sake of building the Jewish family, but you will impinge upon Shema for the sake of building the Jewish family. Now, everything I just said is not written here, but it fits into the context. In a sense, it's written in the context. If you take this Mishnah out of context, then nothing is there. If you put it in its context, then everything is there. And this is, in my mind, absolutely positively fascinating, because some of us might know that there is a machloket among the late Rishonim and Achronim, why are women exempt from some mitzvot? Why? And one opinion says, because women have something else to do. Build a family. Another opinion says, and this is found in the Maharal and in Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, another opinion says that women are on a higher spiritual level, therefore they don't need certain mitzvot. Most of us have heard that being said someplace? Okay, so those are two opinions that are found in halachic literature being debated for the past 600 years. And that's all debated in the general halachic arena, given that women are exempt from certain mitzvot. Why? But now you take that machloket, why women exempt, and you plug it back into the context of our Mishnah, you see one is right and one is wrong. You can clearly decide that machloket by learning the Mishnah in the context of its literary structure. Right? He who said that women are exempt because they have something else to do, that's in the structure of this Mishnah. And the opinion that says they're exempt because they have a higher spiritual level and don't need those mitzvot, that will not fit into this Mishnah, if you read it in context. So I think this is a fantastic textbook case of how you can actually machri, you can decide a machlok that's been going on for 600 years simply by reading the Mishnah as a literary text in its context. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that great?
How is it possible that such opinions could even be presented with
Because the Mishnah
clarity.
Was never learned in its context. It was never learned as a literary text. It was always learned as a separate piece that introduces its own Gemara. Right? Remember in the Talmud, every Mishnah has 10 pages of Talmud before they get to the next Mishnah. But when you learn the Mishnah in literary context, I think you have a final hachra'ah, a final decision.
There was a question came up here, why do they compare Noshim and Avodim together?
Let's talk about that.
It's an embarrassment for Noshim.
Right, Mr. Galler...
To compare them to slaves.
Right, Mr. Galler is right. It doesn't look good. But when you understand it again, in context, it makes perfect sense that there is a certain affinity or certain similarity between women and Avadim in that they both have prior overriding obligations. Mm-hmm. This one to the family and this one to the master. When we learn something in a halakhic context, we know that there might be similarities and differences. To say that there's a similarity between women and slaves doesn't mean that women are slaves. It means in a certain degree they have a legal affinity of that prior obligation.
Along this question, we believe that, isn't it correct that this Avadim is the non-Jewish Evid?
Yes, it is. Right. Yes, it is.
So are we going to address the question of, well, how'd they get some obligation in the first place if they're not Jewish?
Right.
To them, it's not a question of why are they exempt from something. It's why are they obligated in anything?
Yes, so I'll say, I don't have the full picture, but to be a Evid, to be a non-Jewish slave of a Jew, requires a conversion ceremony. You have to convert to a certain level of Judaism. I don't know all the details, but the Evid undergoes he undergoes Tevilah.
Yes.
He undergoes Tevilah. He has to actually immerse himself like a convert. And he becomes a level of Jew, becomes a half-Jew, which is obligated in all the mitzvot. Brit Milah and Tevilah, he's obligated in all the mitzvot that women are obligated in, and exempt from all the mitzvot that women are exempt from. And to go one step further, the process of freeing an Evid means when he decides that he wants to be a full Jew, the process of giving him his freedom, he gets a get shichur. A get is a document of shichur, of liberation, that makes him into a Jew. It's like a conversion document. So now he's a full Jew and he has to do all the other mitzvot that he was exempt from when he was an Evid. That's the halachic framework of Dut. A get is a document, yeah.
It's not a divorce document, it's just a document.
It's
a document of separation.
Yeah, get...
That doesn't mean document.
Get kritut means a document of separation, and that's what we call today a get. Get kritut. Lichrot means to cut, like karet, to cut off. Get kritut means a document of separation, whereas here we're talking about a get shichror, a document of liberation.
But, in effect, you just said how it happens that he comes to be, but it didn't really address why. Why should the slave go through a conversion?
Well, there's two parts to the why question. One is, why would he want to do it? And I have no idea.
Does he have to want to?
I have no idea. And the other part of the question is, why would the halakha want it? And so that second why question is clear. We don't want non-Jews in our houses. Right? We don't want foreign elements. If you want to enter my house, and again, the matter of Ratzon here, of his desire, I don't know how that comes into it, but if you want to have someone in your house, that person has to accept upon himself minimal standards of behavior, otherwise he's a foreign element who's going to influence your children and going to trafe up your kitchen, etc., etc., etc. Right. Okay.
And we learned that we're talking about a non-Jew, non-Jewish slave because of the definition that Rashi gives, is that it?
If it were a Jew that got bought into slavery, he's obligated in everything. I mean, you can't...
Right. That was how I interpreted that Eved, that was applied to a Jewish Eved.
So a Jewish Eved is obligated in all the mitzvot without exception. No different than any other Jew. And really, an Eved Ivri, it shouldn't really be understood as an Eved, as a slave in any sense. He is an indentured servant who's sold for 6 years, usually, for a crime that he committed, and he has to work off the debt that he now owes to the person he committed the crime against, in most cases.
So when we refer to an Eved Ivri, we would actually say Eved Ivri.
I don't want to commit myself across the board. There's always exceptions, but there's Eved Ivri and Eved Knani. Eved Knani is a Canaanite slave, a non-Jewish slave, and Eved Ivri is a Jewish slave. And in both cases, the word Eved is not to be translated as slave, but especially in the case of the Jewish one, is not anything near what we would call a slave. The halakha says that more than he's a slave, his master is a slave to him, because he has to provide him with all the conditions that the halakha indicates. Yeah. Now, we talked about nashim, and we talked about avadim, we didn't talk about ketanim. Ketanim are certainly not in the category of osek b'mitzvah p'tor min mitzvah. Rather, to begin with, they have no mitzvah. Ketan is not obligated. Ketan is a male who is lacking one of two conditions. Condition number one, 13 full years, and number two, 2 pubic hairs.
What?
2 pubic hairs, we call them simanim.
Simanim.
And in the case of a female, she's lacking 12 years, or she's lacking 2 pubic hairs. So technically, halakhically, you have to have both those conditions to become, to go from a katan to a gadol.
How old
for a
male?
13.
It says
9.
Isn't it?
What do you mean it says 9? It says 9?
Under 9 years of age.
Yeah,
according to Rashi, even over that age.
So there's an age of chinuch that when it usually reaches the age of 9, for most mitzvot, we start training them in mitzvot. And they're obligated according to the mitzvah of chinuch, but according to the law itself of the mitzvah, they're only obligated from 13 or 12. I was just going to add that you might ask, well, today, why do we let a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old girl have a bar bat mitzvah when they reach that age without checking if they're really of age through pubic hairs? And the answer is simply because we have an umdana. We have a halachic assumption that in most cases, when you reach the age of 13 for a boy and 12 for a girl, you have also the other condition. And we're willing to base ourselves on an umdana, on a halachic assumption, because there is no overriding halachic reason to require that we know for certain that the kid is a gadol. Had this been the time of the Beit Mikdash, and we're going to have the kid do a mitzvah doraita for the whole community, then we'd have to check. But what does the kid do today? He reads the Torah. Okay. It's not even clear halakha if you need a gadol to do that, by the way. Is he going to do anything that we have to be certain that he's a gadol for? Not really. So therefore, because of reasons of tzniut, we don't check. But if there was anything that we'd have him doing a mitzvah doraita for the community, that he'd have to be a gadol, and if not, we'd all lose out, then we'd have to check. And again, it's like what the case are, you'd have to check. I don't remember the details. That's
That's that. Okay. So then why the ketanim here, if they're not really related? It's a completely different story, ketan. And that's just agav grara. It's dragged in, but it doesn't have the same reasoning at all. Ketan is exempt because he's a ketan. You notice, if you read the rest of the Mishnah, the person with the ketan makes no sense here. Because it says, nashim vavadim uktanim are exempt from kriyat shema and from tefillin. And chayavin in tefillah and mizan birkat hamazon. Is a katan chayav in those things? No, he's not. The katan is just in parentheses. And that's another person who's exempt from kriyat shema and tefillin, but he's also exempt from all the other mitzvot. He doesn't fit into the Mishnah. It's in parentheses.
And it only applies to male children, not...
females also. Female tanim are exempt from kriyat shema and minat tefillin and from all the mitzvot. Okay. So really, again, the context of the Mishnah doesn't apply to tanim at all. It's here as kind of a matbea lashon, as a expression. You see, nashim yisevadim, yasu et tanim, they're also exempt, but not for the same reason, not under the same conditions.
They show up the threesome
right.
throughout
right.
the Talmud, really.
Right, it's a matbea, it's a coinage. Nashim vavadim tanim. So you have to be careful. The coinage, it really doesn't apply here. Okay, so where are we now? We probably got to question 10. Question 10. What question... Excuse me?
No, I was just talking to Yaakov. We were reading where it said Tanim at the bottom in the small print on the Mishnah page.
Mm-hmm.
It said Imam Chayavim the Mitzvah.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand what he was saying there. It finally became clear.
Yeah, yeah. They're not Chayavim at all. Quet 10. What question might we bring up concerning the particular list of mitzvot that the Mishnah chose to mention? So, in the context of this parak, we're talking about Kriyat Shema, and in a larger context we've seen some tefillah in this parak, the last parak, but why the other mitzvot? It could have just said, Nashim Vavadim, and if you want Ketanim, Peturim Mi Kriyat Shema, V'chayavim B'tefillah. Contrast Kriyat Shema and Tefillah. Why do we add in these other mitzvot? Tefillin, mezuzah, and birkat hamazon. What do they have to do with it, anything? So there's really, I don't have a full answer to that, but we could start thinking. Tefillin, in a certain sense, is part of mitzvot Kriyat Shema. If you say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and then you say the first paragraph, you say that I'm going to bind these on my hands and between my eyes to remind myself. The mention of Kriyat Shema brings with it the mention of Tefillin. And the truth also is, as we know from morning davening in Dallas, in which we have to daven when it's night out in the morning sometimes, that Zman Tefillin and Zman Kriyat Shema are the same thing. Why do we wait in the morning sometimes in the winter to put on Tefillin? Because Zman Kriyat Shema hasn't arrived yet. And we've learned
this. You can put on Tefillin the whole day, no?
The whole day, but not at night time.
Not at night time.
Only when you have Uritem Oto, when you can see them.
Yeah.
That was the time of Kriyat Shema. You could distinguish between blue and white, blue and green, remember? That's when you can say Shema, that's when you put on Tefillin. They have the same parameters because they're part of the same set.
So and how does it apply at night time?
Should again, please?
How does it apply then at night? I know we talked about this issue before.
How does which apply?
How does Kriyat Shema and Tefillin, which basically are connected, how does that not work at night time? Because...
I see. Very good. Very good for saying that. It's only the morning Shema that's connected. The morning Shema... I said something wrong to you just now. Uritem Oto, that's tzitzit. That's not tefillin. But it's also true for tefillin.
We were going to get to tzitzit in a minute.
Yeah, okay, so I perhaps messed you up. This man tefillin is based upon Zman Tzitzit, which is based upon Zman Kriyat Shema. And I'm talking about the morning, when you can see the Tzitzit, that's the first time to say Shema, that's the same first time to put on Tefillin, which is after the first light, but before the sun comes up. And it's called Mishiyakir, as we learned, from the time that you can distinguish between blue and white, blue and green. In the evening, there's a Shema that we say that's Right, independent of tefillin and independent of tzitzit, right. Yeah, I'm sorry, that's the case. Yeah. That's the case, right. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Come, say it in the morning, say it when you get up and say it. Say it when you get up and say it when you go to sleep.
Right. But there's no kesher.
So it's like, not evoke you.
And the evening as there is in the morning between
right.
The two.
Right. In the evening when you say Shema, you mention that you should bind them for a sign upon your arms, but you're not allowed to put on tefillin when you're saying that. So that is a little problem in what I'm saying. Good point. I don't have an answer. So we might understand why, in the context of contrasting Kriyat Shema with Tefillah, we mentioned Tefillin in the category of Kriyat Shema. We might understand that. And we also might understand why Mezuzah is mentioned here, because Mezuzah is also in Kriyat Shema. Right? It says you can write them as a sign upon your doorpost. We might not understand why Mezuzah is grouped with Tefillah as opposed to being grouped with Kriyat Shema. But we do understand why it's mentioned here, more or less. But what about Birkat HaMazon? Why is Birkat HaMazon mentioned here? What affinity does it have with Kriyat Shema? And I have no good answer to that. I have a partial answer that's not so good. One of the Rishonim, the Rashba, writes that Birkat HaMazon is mentioned almost in Kriyat Shema. Almost. It says in Kriyat Shema that the rain will fall and you should eat and be satisfied. But it doesn't say eat and satisfied and blessed. That's only found in Deuteronomy chapter 8. So it's not a good answer. It's not a good answer.
Can we interpolate and extend?
That Kriyat Shema is hinting to Deuteronomy that says you should eat and be satisfied and blessed. What can we do?
That's what he's saying.
That's all we have.
It could be that there's a controversy. Are women obligated to say it or not?
Birkat HaMazon.
Yeah. So it's answering an important question.
Yeah, but why put it here? It's not the
main... You're mentioning other stuff.
You're right. That's all I have to say. But there are so many other mitzvot. Uh-huh. Like, for example, there's a controversy of women obligated in Korban Pesach. Does it fit here? No. Okay. So now, let's see. Where did we get to? That was question 11.
Right.
So now we're going to ask ourselves, can we understand why women are obligated in mezuzah? We're going to talk about this contrast. Shema is the matters that are community, that are building community. Women are exempt because they're involved in another mitzvah of building the family. Tefillah, women are obligated because we said that's between the person and God, and community obligations don't impinge upon, or not allowed to impinge upon, relationship with God. What about mezuzah? Why? What would we say? Exempt? Not exempt?
And can I add a sort of from a different perspective, but to strengthen the question, why mezuzah? Because a lot of what we read about women contemplates or assumes that a woman never lives alone. She lives with her father in her father's house, or she lives in her husband's house. She doesn't live alone. Uh-huh. It doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's not putting up a mezuzah anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I have a different
take
on this.
Good point.
That is that mezuzah is applied to the bayit, to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman's obligation is to build the house
uh-huh.
and to build the family structure within the house. Mm-hmm. So it's part of that building process that a woman is involved with.
So you'd say she should be exempt, therefore?
No, she's involved in that.
It's a part of the main mitzvah. She's uh-huh. involved in a building the house.
Uh-huh.
She's chayav, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I wanted to add the most simplest thing, that mezuzah is a mitzvah you do for a minute once, and then there's nothing more to do. It's just to be there. So there's no issue of sekva mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. To fulfill the mitzvah of mezuzah, you don't have to do anything, it just has to be there. If I own a house, and I understand David's question, women usually don't own a house, but if I own a house and there's a mezuzah there, I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of mezuzah without doing anything. So there's no question of a sacred mitzvah, but two mitzvah, should she be exempt, there's no conflict.
That doesn't mean putting up a mezuzah?
Okay, so you have to put it up, but that takes, you know, 1 minute they can do any time. So it'd be hard to see conflict.
In a way, it's saying to the woman, don't be in a house, don't be living in a house that without a mezuzah. In fact, you don't have to do it. Make your husband do it. Marry a man who's going to put one up.
Right. When you, when you live in a house with a mezuzah, even if it was put there 100 years ago, you're fulfilling the mitzvah of mezuzah. If you live in a house without a mezuzah, you are transgressing, even though, as far as your actions, it's the same thing. So we don't have any application of osek b'mitzvah p'tur min mitzvah. Excuse me?
You care for 30 days, right?
Okay. In chutz laretz, 30 days.
Oh, in Israel, it's not 30 days, yeah.
No. It's immediately. That first night. At least one mezuzah. Okay. Let's go on. That basically is our Mishnah. And let's go on to the other source that I brought here from Masechet Kiddushin, which is photostat at the bottom. It's a Mishnah from Masechet Kiddushin. And the Mishnah says, in the brackets, V'chol mitzvat aseh shazman graman, all mitzvot that are aseh, that are positive, as opposed to negative, as opposed to lo taseh, and our zman grama, our time cause, time bound. Right, grama is garam, to cause. Anashim chayavim, men are obligated, v'nashim peturot, and women are exempt. V'chol mitzvat aseh shelo azman grama, all positive mitzvot that are not caused by time, non-time bound. Echad anashim v'chad nashim chayvim, both men and women. Echad X and Echad Y means both this and that. You hear what I said? Echad Yaakov, Echad Steve, Shnehem chayvim. Both this and that, they're both obligated. This is the statement of the famous principle that women are exempt from positive time bound mitzvot. And I'm just going to give you a 1 minute summary of the 8 mitzvot doraita that are positive time bound, more or less. I wrote them down to myself not to forget. We basically all know them, just have to remember them. Let's go around the room. Anyone, 1 mitzvot the women are exempt from, positive time bound.
Shema.
Shema, very good. Right, Shema, that's number 1. Number 2? Holidays. Hagei Tishrei. Sfirat Omer, when it was a mitzvah d'oraita, women were exempt. That's 2. What about Rosh Hashanah? Shofar. Positive time of mitzvah, women are exempt. What about Sukkot? Sukkot is 2. Lulav and? And Leshev B'Sukkah. Leshivat Sukkah, that's 5 already. 5 mitzvot. What about Tefillin? Tefillin is 2 mitzvot. Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh.
They're exempt.
Women are exempt because it's a positive time down mitzvah.
Can they put it on?
That's another question. In the end, yes. But so that's already 7. What did we leave out? We left out tzitzit.
Talis. No.
Positive time bound mitzvah. So there are basically 8 of them. And there are different opinions. There might be one more. There might be one less. There's about 8 of them that women are exempt from because they're positive time bound.
Mitzvah's time bound?
Positive time bound mitzvah.
Tzitzit. Are they time bound?
Yeah, because it's only when you can see them. Not at the nighttime. So you see a positive time bound mitzvah.
What does it mean for mitzvah to be time bound? I mean, many, if not all mitzvah, are time bound in some sense. What is that?
Let's compare Birkat Hamazon with tzitzit.
Okay.
Tzitzit has to be done at a time that is irrespective of any of your own personal decisions. Birkat Hamazon can only be said within 70 minutes of eating, but you decide when to eat.
Okay.
Mezuzah is not time bound. It has to be 30 days within you move in, but you decide when to move in.
Okay.
Hanukkah candles are time bound only on Hanukkah, but it's only the Rabbanan.
All right.
Reading the Megillah and Purim is time bound, but it's only the Rabbanan. There are lots of time-bound mitzvot that women are obligated in. The rule that says women are exempt from positive time-bound mitzvot has about a 50% application. In other words, there's just as many time-bound mitzvot that the rule is not applied to them as it is applied.
Okay, so it's kind of a shorthand, but it's not a general, it's not an absolute principle.
Oh, right, that's a very big sugya. Why do we have the rule at all? Because it doesn't apply in as many cases as it does, what's the meaning of the rule? Is it a siman, or is it just a shorthand, or does it actually have some substance? Is there something in the fact that because it's time-bound, therefore they're exempt? It's a big, big question, and there's no easy answer to it.
The women are obligated to listen to the Megillah reading.
Right, so that's
That's
a time-bound mitzvah, but it's darbanan. Yeah. It's a whole big spiel. So anyway, would we want to ask ourselves, what time is it?
About 5 after.
We want to ask ourselves, what is the relationship, if any, between our Mishnah Masechet Brachot and this Mishnah Masechet Kiddushin? They're both giving us principles of female exemption from mitzvot. Is there any connection? Right. Our Mishnah is telling us in Masechet Brachot that women are oseket b'mitzvah, the mitzvah of the family, etc., etc., etc. That's a meta-assumption behind the text. And therefore, they're exempt from the mitzvot we're talking about, which are Kriyat Shema and Tefillin. And they're not exempt from some other mitzvot, Tefillin, Mezuzah, Birkat HaMazon. Does that bear any resemblance to the Mishnah Kiddushin that says women are exempt from positive time-bound mitzvot, but any other mitzvot they're not exempt? Just to think for a minute. Is there a connection here? Do the mitzvot in our Mishnah fit into the rule? And let's think about that. Kriyat Shema, is it time-bound? Yes, it is. So you understand why women are exempt given the rule in the Masechet Kiddushin. Tefillin, are they time-bound? Yes, they're only in the daytime, not at nighttime. Fine. Tefillah, women are obligated in tefillah, but isn't it a positive time-bound mitzvah? We're stumped. Mezuzah. Okay, mezuzah is not time-bound. It depends on when you move in, but that's not a time on the calendar, not a given time, so that makes sense. Birkat HaMazon is also not time-bound. So that's why women are obligated. So we'd say it could be that the Mishnah in Kiddushin and the Mishnah in Brachot are not contradictory, except for this issue of tefillah. That's one possibility. We'd have to deal with tefillah. Another possibility is to say we really have two different unrelated things going on here. That whatever Kiddushin says, it says, women exempt from positive time, I mean, so for whatever reason. Whereas our Mishnah is talking about something completely different. It's focusing on Kriyat Shema, pointing out that anything that's a mitzvah of community, of building human frameworks, you're exempt from when you're involved in building, I didn't say it right, that Kriyat Shema is a mitzvah you're exempt from when you're involved in building community, since women are always involved in building community, building a family, they're always exempt from Kriyat Shema. Perhaps it's not related to what it says in Kiddushin. Perhaps, in any case, of course, the halakha tries to unify things and tries to see everything in one perspective. It indeed puts our Mishnah in Brachot into the framework of positive time mitzvot, and therefore asks the question, well, what about tefillah? What about tefillah? And I'll just say that of course, on an ideological level, we can think of a unification between Brachot and Kiddushin. Because we'd say, why are women exempt from positive time-bound mitzvot? Well, mitzvot that are time-bound cause the most conflict with someone whose whole life is a framework of obligation to building the family. If there's a mitzvah that has to be done at a certain time, and the baby is crying, or has to be fed, or etc., then you have a real problem. If you have a mitzvah that's not time, then you can always put it off just another time, so there's less of a conflict. So it could be, indeed, that the principle in Masechet Brachot and the principle in Masechet Kiddushin do fit, except again for tefillah. Tefillah is positive time-bound, so women should be exempt. But on the other hand, it's not the community type of mitzvah that we've always said that you're exempt from Shema in order to be involved in community, but you're never exempt from tefillah in order to be involved in community. So according to the principles in Masechet Brachot, the woman shouldn't be exempt from tefillah, and she's not. But according to the principles in Masechet Kiddushin, positive time-bound, she's exempt. She should be exempt from tefillah. that's where we're stuck. And from this point, there's a whole body of literature discussing these two Mishnayot, and especially focusing on Tefillah, because that's the flashpoint that is in conflict between the two principles. Okay? So whatever time we have left, we'll spend on this matter of reconciliation of Brachot and Kiddushin, focusing on the flashpoint of Tefillah. Are women exempt from Tefillah, which would be what we'd learn from Kiddushin, positive time bound, or are women obligated in Tefillah, which is what we learn from Masechet Brachot? Okay? So, we'll run through 1,000 sources in 1,000 seconds. The first place we want to look is in Hilchot Alfasi. I'm here in C. Hilchot Alfasi is what you might have heard as the Reef. Anyone hear of the Reef? Mm-hmm. Rav Yitzhak Alfasi. It's an acronym. Rav Yitzhak Alfasi. Yitzhak begins with a Yud, and Alfasi is Arabic. It means the Fezi. He's from Fez. So the Fezi, Fez begins with a Pei. So it's Resh for Rav, Yud for Yitzhak, Pei for Fez, Reef. Resh, Yud, Pei, Reef. So the Reef wrote a commentary summary of the Talmud, in which he only focused on the halachic conclusions. And I photostated a tiny, tiny piece from Hilchot HaRif, Hilchot Alfasi. See where it is? Mm-hmm. On this page over here. And he quotes the Mishnah word for word, and then quotes part of the Gemara. Now, let me tell you the following. There is a Gemara on our Mishnah. Our Mishnah in Masechet Brachot has Gemara on it. And the Gemara deals with the issue we've been dealing with. Are women exempt or obligated in Tefillah, and why or why not? But there are so many different textual variants of those five lines of Gemara, you can make no sense of it. And therefore, we're going to skip the Gemara and see how each Rishon expresses his opinion, and it all depends on which gears of the Gemara he had. Were we to bring the Gemara here, we'd spend all day in it trying to figure out. There's so many different texts. So we'll just see now the text of the Tosfot and the text of the Alfasi. Says the Rif, Matnitin, abbreviation for the Aramaic of Mishnah. Nashim Vavadim Uktanim Peturin Mi, what's the next word?
Kriyat Shema,
abbreviation. Mi Kriyat Shema Uminat Filin. The first line. And that's just a quote from the Mishnah.
Yeah.
V'chayavin batfilah uv'mizuzah uv'erkat hamazon. Word for word, Mishnah. And now the Gemara. How does he understand the Gemara on this? Kriyat Shema utfilin dahavalei mitzvat asei shazman grama. So he says, Kriyat Shema and filin de, which means that it is havalei, it is mitzvat asei shazman grama, positive time bound. V'chol mitzvat asei shazman grama nashim peturot. And all positive time bound mitzvot, women are exempt. So he understands our Mishnah in light of the Mishnah Kiddushin. It makes sense that kriyat shma and filin, women are exempt because they're positive time bound. Going on now, we're in the last word of the third line. Tefillah u'mezuzah birkat hamazon, the three mitzvot mentioned in our Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that women are obligated. He says, dehavalei, that it is mitzvat asei shelo hazman grama, they're positive mitzvot that are not time bound. V'chol mitzvat asei shelo hazman grama nashim hayavot. And all positive, non-time-bound mitzvot, women are hayavot. So at this point, everyone should jump up and down and say, wait a second, how could he say what he just said? What unbelievably difficult thing did he just say?
Tefillah is not time-bound.
Tefillah is not time-bound. How could he just said tefillah is not time-bound, right? Right, Steve? He said that? How could he say that? We all know tefillah is the most time-bound thing in the world. And that was our whole problem. Our Mishnah and Brachot said women are obligated, and we said, how could they be obligated? According to the principle in Kiddushin, that positive time-bound mitzvot, women are exempt, they should be exempt. So the Rif says that tefillah is not time-bound, and that's his interpretation, according to his girsa of the Gemara. How could it be? So the answer to how could it be is found in the Rambam. The Rambam is a student of a student of a student of the Rif. The Rambam's father learned with a student of the Rif. The Rambam's father is, we call Rav Maimon, and he learned with the Rimigash, who was a student of the Rif. So the Rambam brings on a tradition that he got from his father, who got from his teacher, who got from the Rif. Why tefillah is not a time-bound mitzvah? You ready?
So the Rif is what period then?
The Rif is at the very end of the Gaonim. This is about the year 990, more or less, in what today is Iraq, in Babel. Right? And the Rim Migash is Rav Yitzhak from Gash. Where Gash is, I don't know. And the Rambam's father learned with the Rim Migash, and the Rambam got it from his father. Four generations.
So the Rif was from Iraq, even though it's supposed to be from Fez?
Oh, right. So he migrated. Remember where Morocco is, right? We're still,
right.
We haven't crossed the Mediterranean yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
that's the point. But you know what? I should really check. I'm pretty sure that the Rif learned in his youth in the yeshivot in Babel.
And then he went to Fez.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. Okay. And of course, the Spanish Jews came from across the Iberian Straits, right from, we're talking Jews from Morocco, migrating to Spain. That's the Rambam's father. Okay, so says the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah.
Where's that?
Same page, right over here. Mm-hmm. Same page. My handwriting says at the top right-hand corner, Mishneh Torah LaRambam. Mm-hmm. This is my writing. Sefer Ahava, the Book of Love, which is the second book of the Mishneh Torah. Mm-hmm. Hilchot Tfilah, Perek Aleph, the very beginning of Hilchot Tfilah. Mitzvat Aseh Litpalel B'chol Yom. It's a positive mitzvah to pray every day. Notice he didn't say three times a day, he said every day.
At least once a day.
And I'm going to skip all the proofs because we don't have time and go to the second halakha, halakha bet. Ve'ein minyan hatfilot min hatorah. And isn't the number of tefillot from the Torah, in better English, the amount of times you have to daven every day is not Torah mandated. Vein mishneh hatfilah hazot min hatorah. And the text, the word mishneh here means text, and the text of the tefillah is not from the Torah. Ve'ein letfilah zman kavua min hatorah. And there isn't to tefillah a set time from the Torah. Ulefichach, and therefore, nashim v'avadim l'chayavim b'tefillah.
Pretty clear.
Lefi, because, she, he, mitzvat aseh shelo hazman grama. In other words, when the Rif said that women are obligated in tefillah, because it's a positive, non-time-bound mitzvot, yeah? He wasn't talking about the tefillah we know today. He was talking about a basic core mitzvah of crying out to Kodesh Baruch Hu once a day, whenever you want, however you want, wherever you want, with any text you want. Of course, our mitzvah of davening three times a day is time-bound. But the core mitzvah of tefillah is not. And the Rambam and the Rif are reading our Mishnah that says women are obligated in tefillah as not talking about the tefillah we know today, but rather talking about the core mitzvah of crying out to Kodesh Baruch Hu once a day, wherever, however, whenever you want. Okay?
So if you just said mitzvot aseh shehazman grama from the Torah, doesn't that simplify everything? Since these are, maybe not everything, but a lot...
That's the principle that is going here, according to these commentators.
Yeah, so Why not just add that in and eliminate the controversy?
But it's not clear that there's such a thing as a core mitzvah of tefillah that's derived. That's the opinion of the Rambam and the Reef. We'll see something else another minute.
Okay.
So, after all, we used to just give sacrifices.
Right.
Not pray.
At times of the temple. Or, I mean, you know, originally the method of communicating was sacrifices.
I mean, how does that apply for women? Are they obligated to
give sacrifices?
Yeah, there's. I mean, there are certain ones that they do have to bring, right?
Well, we're talking about tefillah as a replacement for their communal sacrifices that are obligation on Kol Am Yisrael.
Okay.
I was just looking at my phone to look at my watch because I don't want to keep people too long, so I want to finish quickly.
Is anybody?
We're fine.
I think it was Bernie that had the special problem. Is that right? Are you okay time-wise?
Yeah.
Okay, so just 5-7 minutes. What we just saw in the Reef and the Rambam is the foundation for the halakha as it's known today in Sephardic communities, which means that women are obligated in the core mitzvah d'oraita of tefillah, but they're exempt from the current practice, the Rabbanan, of tefillah 3 times a day. And therefore, if you look, for example, in the writings of Rav Avadya Yosef, the former Sephardi chief rabbi, or any of the other Sephardi poskim today, women are exempt from tefillah as it's practiced today, but they're obligated in tefillah once a day. And how do you fulfill that mitzvah once a day? In the minimum fashion, if someone says, how are you? You say, Baruch Hashem, you fulfill the minimum mitzvah of tefillah, according to some poskim. According to the Rambam, in order to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraita, you have to say some formula of shevach vakasha hoda'ah, of praising God, requesting from God, and thanking God. But you do it yourself, your own words, at any time you want, only once a day, and in 5 minutes you fulfilled your obligation. Of course, a woman can use the text that men use and can do it 3 times a day, but the obligation is to do whatever text you want, whatever permission, any time, once a day, of praise, request, thanksgiving. And that's the Sephardi halakha. Rav Avad Yosef says that a woman, given that she has to do shevach, bakasha hoda, it would be good to use the text that Chachamim instituted, but again, only once a day, no special time. The Ashkenazi approach is totally different. Ashkenazi approach has a different understanding of our Mishnah and its relationship to the Mishnah in Kiddushin. Okay? So let's go to the Ashkenazi approach, which we're going to find in Tosfot. And I photo studied the Tosfot on the page of Gemara. And again, seeing the Gemara is almost worthless because there's so many different girsaot. But to see the girsa that Tosfot had will be instructive. Okay, so the bottom left-hand corner is the Tosfot. And you can see this page of Gemara has our Mishnah on it. Right at the top it says, Mishnah Nashim Vavadim Tanim Peturim, etc. And this page of Gemara, here's the Tosfot. At the bottom it says as follows. This is his girsa of the Gemara. Bitfilah, it says women are obligated bitfilah, right? That's our Mishnah. And his Gemara says pshita, obvious. Why are you saying it? It's a given. Then the Gemara comes back and says, I'll tell you why it's not obvious and has to be said that women are obligated. Kivan dichtiv erev evokev etzoraim asicha vehema, which is a verse from Tehillim that says erev, right, evening, and boker, and morning, and tzoraim, and afternoon, asicha vehema, I'll express my conversation with God vehema, and I will meditate. The verse in Tehillim that says, express my feelings to God 3 times a day. Kemitzvat asei shazman grama have. It's like a mitzvat asei that is time bound. In other words, what is the Gemara telling us? Because prayer is a positive time-bound mitzvah, therefore I would have thought that women are exempt, and therefore the Mishnah, if it wants me to obligate women, has to say it. But why should they be obligated if it is a positive time ben mitzvah? So the Gemara goes on to say, kamashmalan, the Mishnah comes to mashmalan to let us hear, derachmeninhu, that rachamim it is. Rachme is rachamim, mercy. Ninhu means it is. In other words, since tefillah is a positive time-bound mitzvah, you would have thought that women are exempt. But the Mishnah comes to teach you that even though it is a positive time-bound mitzvah, since it is a request for rachamim, there's a special rabbinic decree to include mitzvah, women in the mitzvah. And that's the Ashkenazi approach. That when the Mishnah says women are obligated in tefillah, it means the tefillah that is positive time bound. But they're obligated anyway because of a special circumstance. Special circumstance is that this mitzvah of tefillah is a request for rachamim. It's a request for connection to God. And no one could be exempt from that because the basis of Judaism is a connection to God. How can you obligate only men and not women in that? Because of the fundamental nature of tefillah and establishing the connection to God, therefore you cannot exempt women even though it's positive time bound, and therefore even though the Mishnah in Kiddushin says that women are exempt from positive time bound mitzvot, the Mishnah in Brachot says there's an exception, tefillah. And this is going to be the base of the Ashkenazi approach, right? Remember the Rif and the Rambam are Sfardim, that's why they're the foundation of the Sfardi Halakha. Tosfot is in northern France in the 13th, 14th centuries. And this is the basis for the Ashkenazi take on the halakha, that women are obligated in the same tefillot that men are obligated in, the same text, the same derabbanan times. And the only machloket within the Ashkenazi poskim is, are women obligated twice a day or three times a day? Why? Because really, even men are only obligated twice a day. Shachrit and Mincha. Tefillat Arevit is a later custom. So there's a question, should women be obligated in the later custom? Since they never took upon themselves, only men took upon themselves to add a third tefillah. So the Mishnah Berurah says women are obligated in two tefillot today. Shachrit and Mincha, the same text, the same time. Again, when I say tefillah, only Amidah. Not anything else before or after. Only the Amidah. Twice a day, and that's the Ashkenazi approach. And if we have time, we'll just read in the Mishnah Berurah. Is that okay? We'll just read it together, and then we'll finish. So that is the page of Mishnah Berurah that I photostudied, which is this one.
So just one quick question about the Rif Sephardic approach. It reads the word tefillah in a contrary way to what's the standard accepted meaning of Talmudic word tefillah.
100% true. 100% true what you said.
There's a question. How do they get away with that? Or do they? How do they explain
that? Well, that's why there's a disagreement.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
It's very difficult. Okay. It's an effort to understand a difficult text. How could women be obligated? So, first let's look at the Shulchan Aruch, which brings, of course, this Sfardi approach, which is going to be the Rif and the Rambam. Mm-hmm. And it says in brackets there, is it my bracket?
Mm-hmm.
Nashim Bavadim, right over here. Sha'af al pi, that even though Shepiturim mikriyat shema, even though they're exempt from kriyat shema, Hayavim b'tfilah. Like the Mishnah says, Chayfim b'tfilah, mipenei shehi mitzvat asei shelo.
Azman grama.
Shelo azman grama. That's the Rambam. We're not talking about the tefillah that we do at a certain time. We're talking about the basic core, deraita, and that is shelo hazman grama, and that's the Sfardi approach. And I brought here something we won't see. I brought a response of Rav Avadya Yosef, who explains as far as the approach and says that women should daven once a day, whenever they want, however they want. But the ideal, he says, if we already have a text, why don't they use the text, but only once a day?
I missed something. Where did we get the tefillah as a mitzvah?
Oh, I skipped that part. You're right, we didn't talk about it. The Rambam proves that there's such a thing as a mitzvah of tefillah once a day from the Torah. And he finds it in the verse that says that you should serve God with your heart. What does it mean to serve God with your heart? It means to... But I skipped that part of it. You're right. So anyway, the Mishnah Berurah bring the Ashkenazi approach. It's not found in the Ramah. It's only found in the Mishnah Berurah, who brings earlier. It brings other poskim. Let me find it for you. I'm going to skip to make it quicker. Here it is. Avaldata Ramban. It's three lines from the bottom of the Mishnah Berurah, the fourth word of the line. Avaldata Ramban. Shikar mitzvah tefillah midivrei sofrim. But the opinion of the Ramban is that the ikar, the foundation of mitzvah tefillah, is from divrei sofrim. It's the Rabbanan. There is no deraita aspect.
So the Rabbanan, yeah.
So you can't interpret like the Rambam and the Rif did. There is no such thing as tefillah that's not zman grama. It's all from divrei sofrim, shem anshei kenesu l'dola. It's all from the rabbis who are the men of the great assembly. Shetiknu yud chet brachot al seder. And they instituted 18 brachot according to their order. Litpelel otan shachrit u'mincha. To daven them shachrit and mincha chova as an obligation, aravik reshut. And the evening prayer they instituted as a voluntary, as reshut. Vafopi shehi mitzvat asei midivrei sofim shazman grama. And even though it is a positive mitzvah of the rabbis that is man grama, that is time bound, v'nashim pitorot mikol mitzvot asei shazman grama, and women should be exempt from all positive time bound mitzvot.
Yeah.
Now the last word of the second to last line. Afilu midivrei sofrim, even from rabbinical. In other words, women should be exempt even from rabbinical time bound mitzvot. Kagon kiddush v'havdalah, like kiddush and havdalah, women should have been exempt. In the end, women are obligated for a different reason, but that's not for now. Af al pichein, even so, chivu otan v'tfilat shachrit u'mincha kamo anashim. They've been obligated in shachrit and mincha like men. It's an exception. Ho'il, since u'tfilah hi vakashat rachamim. Because tefillah is a request for mercy, v'chein ikar, and so is the law. But that's the law. Says the Mishnah Berurah, the law is that women are obligated in shachrit and mincha. And it goes on to here. Next column. Right next to it. Right? Ki chein dat rova poskim, because that's the opinion of most of the poskim. And so is the decision in Shagat Aryeh, one of the major Ashkenazi poskim of the early 19th century. Therefore, you should warn your women that they should daven Shmona Esrei. That's it.
My impression that in Israel there are many that the I'll say it colloquially that the Sephardic traditions sort of bleed into the society generally to a large extent. Is that why many Israelis, even Ashkenazi, the women don't daven?
Right, that's a good point, but that's probably not the reason. It goes back to Eastern Europe. Notice that the Mishnah Berurah said you should warn the women to daven. It's a
not.
Hint to the fact that they don't. It's brought in many poskim that this is a classic case of a halakha that is mostly known in the breach. How's the expression go?
It's observed
in the breach.
Yeah.
For some reason, and there are different sociological, historical studies, women in Eastern Europe didn't daven. Even though the Mishnah Berurah said on the basis of a clear tradition that they should.
Ashkenazi's point is to have them daven, but they don't, and the Sephardi is to not really have them daven, but they do?
No.
They don't either.
Here we have a case in which one taken it is the halakha was something that the Jewish communities just couldn't accept. It was very, very hard for women to daven twice a day, according to the times of davening. It's really hard if you have one kid, two kids, five kids, six kids. So according to the Ashkenazi poskim basis we saw on the Tosfot, women should be exempt because it's positive time down. We understand how hard it is for them to daven because of their obligation to the family, but the Halakha Torah was such a basis, such a fundamental of having that basic connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Halakha obligated it, but it really wasn't accepted. And in Haredi communities to this very day, you see all different types of legal maneuvers to explain why the wife of the rabbi doesn't daven. Halachically she should, but many women don't. In the more modern Orthodox communities, where there's more of an, I wouldn't say that, there's been an effort to teach women to daven twice a day.
On the college campuses, I've noticed on the college campuses, you know, even early in the morning at 6:30, 7 o'clock that I've gone to a minyan at Harvard or other places, there are more women there on the other side of the pizza than there are men.
Very good.
On a regular basis, not.
Yeah, yeah.
In Europe, the women used to go to the shul every Shabbos, you know, in daven there. But how do they daven? They had a senereno, you know, a special siddur in Yiddish, translated in Yiddish. And it was like my grandmother used to read it for them. Read for them. They didn't never studied Hebrew. The women never, they never learned the woman Hebrew language, only Yiddish. So they understood Yiddish, you see. So the one woman who could read it, she read it for them, and they listened to that. That was their davening in the shul. But they went, all of them went to the shul Shabbos morning. They had an upstairs. They separated upstairs, you know, like that. That's the way we used to do it with the women in Shabbos, on Shabbat. Not Friday night, only on Shabbat morning. They went to daven there.
So, and they davened completely separate. They didn't listen to the men.
They did not listen to the men. They davened separate upstairs.
But that wasn't just Shabbos, by the way.
They could hardly hear it. They were so high up there, they couldn't even hear the davening. But because there was no loudspeakers and stuff like that. But then they sat there upstairs, and one woman who could read for them, read it for them, and they listened to that, and that was their davening. But they sat there all the time. The men were downstairs, and everybody went downstairs together at the same time, and out at the same time.
Yeah, thank you.
But that's the way it was, a separate davening.
It's interesting that the Ramad doesn't say anything here.
Right, yeah, the Ramad doesn't say anything.
But it's interesting, you see, that woman